Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Good afternoon. This is Marcello Rolando, your host for the Reasonable Voices radio show, where reasonable voices get to air their reasonable points of view and share their thoughts and ideas on education and art and, of course, politics. My guest today is Jane Dittmar. Some of you may know Jane as the chair of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, who recently announced after her term, she will be resigning to seek another, even higher office. But we'll talk more about that later. Right now, good afternoon, Jane. How are you?
I am fine, Marcello. It's wonderful to be with you.
It's I always enjoy our conversations too. I think it's the first time you've been on the Reasonable Voices, but you have been on as chair of Albemarle County Board of Supervisors a few times for talking about the county, and there is a great deal changing, going on, improvements, growth, if you will, in Charlottesville itself, and of course, Charlottesville is in Albemarle County, and the county, which is in many ways very different from the city of Charlottesville, is really going through some changes. So let's start off with, you know what I want to ask you, which is, I guess, very timely, all things considered. How has a recent record-breaking rainfall on the East Coast, in the Carolinas, and of course we've seen some in Virginia as well, how has that impacted upon the execution of the physical application, if you will, of the 2964 Comprehensive Plan Amendment? Tell us about the plan and tell us about how is it being physicalized. Is it slowed down by this weather?
If you're talking about the recent board work on whether or not we should change the land use around the interchange at 29 and 64. Is that,
yes,
Marcello, where we want to go?
Yes.
Our water table and water use may relate to that a little bit, because at the time that we were considering this, we had a prospect from a potential business that would have used water,
mm-hmm,
as part of their production. It's a company that brews and then distributes beer, and so they, like Coke and Pepsi and other breweries, use water. And one of our considerations was how's our water table and how is our water storage going?
Yes.
We have had a lot of rain recently, and for most of the time until probably the last 4 or 5 days, we were thrilled to have this rain.
Yes.
We were down about 1 million gallons in our water table. Part of that due to drought conditions where we just didn't have rain in the last 8 weeks.
Mm.
And part of it is it always drops a little when our students come back to school, because that's a massive increase in use of water,
sure,
for the community. So we wanted to shore that up, and certainly the rain has allowed us to do that. And then it got to be a little too much, I think,
yes,
for not only our capacity but also our personalities anyway.
Yes. Well, it really has been. I mean, the weather,
I often say to people, both on and off radio, we look at the drought in California and the tornadoes in the Midwest, and we somehow feel we are disconnected from that. And we aren't really. It's all connected. And, you know, what happens to one American state tends to eventually, as weather has a habit of moving across the country, as well as coming up from the south. And, of course, things start in Africa and on the west coast as well, earthquakes. Anyway, but weather is here. And now that we have endured, as you say, some flooding and accidents and erosion of roads or whatever, how is the county board responding, I guess, is the question.
Well, with regard to the condition of our roads, primary roads and those that we share maintenance with VDOT are VDOT's responsibility.
Yes.
And so primary roads, they're all on top of. For our secondary, especially in the rural area, we often rely on our citizens to contact supervisors or our county staff to say, hey, the ruts are too big for my car, or trees are down, or please come help us, we have a sinkhole. So we're busy right now taking inquiry from folks who would like us to draw the attention of VDOT to their specific rural road. And that's a result, of course, of the increase in erosion due to the rain. And that's cyclical. We also have that during the winter when we have snow and then the repair work that needs to be done to roads as a result of that.
And I think it might be unusual for some people, but we really do in Charlottesville and in Albemarle County have a direct line of contact with both our Board of Supervisors. I mean, as a news person, I've seen this, and with the City Council as well, that people can attend your meetings, speak up, express their concerns, and of course pick up the phone or send an email and say, hey, we've got a bridge out, can you help us? So I'm not at all surprised to hear that you're both busy, but on top of all of that. And part of the reason I'm not surprised is that even before you were chair of the Board of Supervisors, you were always interested as a businesswoman and as an educator in the county, the rural areas, and making certain that they get the attention they need, especially students and the need to, what shall I say, get everyone connected. That sounds like a great phrase.
But, absolutely. I would say I became more aware of the need for this connection once I was on the board, because in my district, which is the eastern portion of Albemarle County, going all the way from Louisa down to the town of Scottsdale or the Buckingham County line, that we have a lot of rural area there, and that area needs assistance with regard to broadband, specifically internet service and cell service. So the connection point there and how it relates to public education and kids being able to do their homework, how it relates to small businesses, especially agribusiness and agritourism businesses.
Yes.
It's really a critical mission, not only for our local government, but also state government and federal government.
Yes. Do you feel like you're getting the kind of response from Richmond and D.C. that you need to support getting internet connections and computers and higher standards of education in the county?
I'll answer that in two parts. First, I think there's a growing awareness. I think it's a groundswell from people up through local government to our state government leaders. And I think Washington has gotten the point. Now, what's not happening is a great coordinated effort for us to do this. Let's see, it was prior to Governor McAuliffe, but under Governor McAuliffe's leadership, we've enhanced the Broadband Commission that reports directly to the governor, and we have recommendations coming on how to team up better with local government as well as deploy, period, with state resources. When Virginia sees a state like New York, who has made a commitment to their people to have broadband and internet service specifically to every household and business in the entire state, by 2018, and they're putting the political will behind it. We see what other states are deciding is really important. With the federal government, there are a lot of grants and programs, but we need to organize them better and we need to access them.
Yes.
So I think the teamwork among the three legislatures will be really important.
I wonder, I've often had guests who speak of how sequestration has cut into what states and therefore counties and cities can expect in the way of funding, be it transportation, education, whatever. Have you found that to be a special challenge on top of everything else?
Well, we've been through one sequestration, and as your listeners may remember, this was the poison pill that Congress and the President signed into law, that if the Congress could not balance the budget in such a way that we were really making an impact on the national debt and also the annual deficit, that sequestration would automatically happen, which is a percentage cut of all federal programs across the board.
Yes.
And no one thought that we would ever resort to that.
Mm.
We thought that that would be enough impetus for Congress to be able to do their work.
Yes.
Well, we went through one, and guess which state was the state that was hurt the most in the first sequestration?
I would guess Virginia, yes, yes.
And that's because we have so many federal installations in Northern Virginia. We have so much military. And guess what? We have a lot of public sector federal dollars here in Charlottesville.
Mm.
So it impacted us greatly. It caused us to come out of the recession more slowly than other states. And we are holding our breath and hoping that Congress does not end up having us go through a second sequestration, which is due to hit in October if we don't get our act together.
Exactly. I know the president has sort of put down an ultimatum, but, you know, it takes two to tango, as they say. Getting back to the county for a moment, although I know your interests lie at every level of government and every level of society and trying to, especially with education and fiscal responsibility, et cetera. So I don't think we've gotten off topic at all. But tell us, you have a management funding project for, how shall I say, an aromatic looming project for solid waste and stormwater management. How does this come about, and what exactly does that mean? What are we going to use this funding for?
Well, it's actually, those are two big projects,
yes,
that Citizens Committees have been working on now for really almost 2 years. One is the stormwater management operation that we are required to have because of the Chesapeake Bay regulation. And we knew that this was going to cost us, not only our locality, but localities across the Commonwealth, a great deal of additional money. So different jurisdictions have handled it differently. The city of Charlottesville, for instance, went right at it and ended up setting up a way in which they tax landowners for impervious surface.
Mm-hmm.
And it was controversial, but they settled everyone down. They said, this is the way we're doing it. We've studied three different ways, and I don't think there are hybrids, but I'll just say one is to use general tax revenue, which will cause another small tax increase if we do it where we have everybody in Alma County help pay for stormwater management.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to do it is to set up a stormwater utility, and then we put into place a formula where different people pay different amounts of money based on how their water is brought down into the water table from the ground. And then finally, there's a third way that we're examining, and we're going to get a report on all three and a recommendation this month for us to then chew on as a board to decide which way to go. We will have a really good public process where people can weigh in and let us know what they think about this before we vote on it.
And what's the plan for the solid waste? I know there have been a number of public opinions expressed about that, but where do you see that going?
Well, I think that our work is in part stimulated by the fact that the Department of Environmental Quality, the DEQ, has required us to figure out what we're doing with the Ivy area, where we used to have a landfill. It no longer acts as a landfill, but it's a transfer station. So people, haulers and individuals can bring their trash, and then it's sorted through and sent elsewhere to be finally disposed of. We have a deadline of December for that. In addition, we don't have a well-thought-out recycling program for the entire community.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we have a solid waste, long range solid waste committee that's coming back with advice, and actually we will hear about that on Wednesday. From there, we will have to make some decisions about what to do. Some of it comes with very little price tag, and some will come with more.
Mm. What is the Southern Neighborhoods Advisory Committee, and how are they? Yes.
All right. So we have citizens advisory committees in strategic areas around the county. For instance, as the supervisor from Scottsdale District, I have an active one in the northern part of the district, the Ravana Citizens Advisory Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And when something's going on in that area, that committee helps sort through what the impacts are and what it means in terms of our comprehensive plan. We didn't have one for the southern neighborhoods, which partly are in the Samuel Miller District, mm-hmm. Bruce Palmer's district, and partly in mine. We have a lot of people living on Avon Street and on Fifth Street, and so we have just appointed our first group to that. It's going to be called the Fifth and the Avon Citizens Advisory Committee, and we will hold our first meeting, our orientation, on October 8th, and I suspect we will see some really good planning come out of that.
And when you say citizens, you mean the general public, as in business owners, community leaders, rank and file?
Yes.
Okay.
All of the above.
Excellent. I've always liked that about this area in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, how neighbors get together. And, of course, there have been fiery conversations, but at least they come together and everyone has their agenda. If you own a small business and you're on Route 29, we know that. If you're a farmer and you know, your crops are affected or a pipeline wants to go through, you know, we hear all of that. And there, as I said earlier, I've always been impressed with the accessibility of the county and city governments. I mean, I can pick up the phone and call the city manager and go into his office, sit down. It may take 3 weeks for him to have time, but we sit down, we chat, and have very candid conversations. So it's quite an example, and not every place, not every city, not every county, not every state is a commonwealth, number one, and number two, has this sort of rippling effect, if you will, of government that is so close to the people. When you think of Charlottesville City Council and then Albemarle Board of Supervisors, and then, of course, Governor McAuliffe in Richmond, although I often wonder what the State House delegates are doing, but then that may be another show. But we the people are able to reach those who are in government and in business, because we're all talking to one another, I guess is the point I wanted to make.
Yes.
Let's talk just a bit before we go to a break about physical health, mental health, fiscal health. I know, and I don't expect you to cover all of that before the break, but I just want, for instance, we'll touch mental health when we come back. What about this AAA rating for the fiscal health of the county? Who rates us, and how accurate is that?
Well, I think it's something that I'm very proud of, and Albemarle County citizens should be proud of. And I know a lot of people know this, but there are three rating services in the country that look at both corporate and municipal health. We have what's known as a triple A rating, which means all three of them say that we are the lowest risk with regard to borrowing because we are so financially sound.
Wow.
That doesn't mean we don't have our funding challenges, particularly when we disagree about priorities.
Yes.
But in terms of the way in which we manage money and the way in which we repay any money that we borrow for capital projects, we are the cream of the cream in the country. Additionally, and I serve on the audit committee for the county, we have clean audits that come back every year. And so I want people to know, and I sleep well at night, knowing that we are organized so well with regard to financial management.
Fantastic. Triple A. I thought I was seeing double, but that's exactly what you meant. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, we're going to take a short break. I'm talking to the chairperson of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, who is stepping down to step up. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk about education more, mental health issues. Stay with us. Don't go away.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Dracula, Nosferatu, Lestat du Liancourt, Edward Cullen. These and other notable vampires have been gracing screens for decades, offering viewers lurid twists on romantic horror. Yet there's plenty of room for vampires in comedy, too, as proven by Taika Waititi and Jemaine Clement's uproarious mockumentary, What We Do in the Shadows. A vampiric foursome have decided to share a house in modern-day Wellington, New Zealand. For kicks, they have opted to let a documentary crew into their dead lives as they deal with roommate quibbles, seek out new victims at local pubs, and prepare for the biggest undead masquerade ball in the country, all while teaching the knack of blood-sucking to a newbie vampire. Each of the roommates is unique. Lothario Vladislav is a knockout. Viago, a hilarious dandy exuding boyish charm behind a coquettishly fanged smile. Petter, a Nosferatu fossil. And Deacon, a rebellious non-soul accepting no boundaries. As they negotiate the ever-changing human world around them, their madcap adventures include just enough blood spatter to generate some very serious laughter. Affably low-key, What We Do in the Shadows is not just for vampire fans. It's bloody good. So enjoy, my friends, while you live and laugh well. What We Do in the Shadows, not in theaters, discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices radio talk show. And my guest today is the chair of the Albemarle Board of Supervisors. That's the Albemarle County in Virginia. We have been talking about a number of things. There are a lot of issues that are important to her, and she's been quite involved in fiscal health. We heard in the last segment AAA ratings from all three of rating institutions in the nation. And also, we've talked about the different citizen committees that have been pulled together to advise the county government on what's needed and how accessible everyone is, and all the that's going on in addition to the U-turns on Route 29, etc. But I'd like to turn now to some of the things that have been happening that, you know, I'm a firm believer that what happens anywhere in the U.S., everywhere in the U.S. should be aware of and be thinking about solutions, preventive solutions. And so, but mental health, a problem I have personally with the media, being a member of it, is that we rarely hear those words, mental health, unless someone has shot someone. And the recent shootings, you know, in Virginia, I didn't know the two TV reporters, but I know people who know them and work with them. And of course, most recently in Oregon. I'm just wondering, Jane, has the Board of Supervisors talked at all about the need for improvements in mental health programs? I know you know Senator Creek Deeds. And if so, what, if anything, are we trying to coordinate with law enforcement as well as, you know, hospitals to deal with, should something like this happen in Charlottesville or in Albemarle County? We've been very fortunate. I've talked with Chief Longo, but what are your thoughts?
Well, you ask if we have had discussions about mental health and also mental health services.
Yes.
And I will, and you mentioned Senator Creedy. We meet with our General Assembly legislators at least once annually, and last fall, of course, with Cree, mm-hmm. talking to us about what he was trying to accomplish in the General Assembly the last year, and then he's got some more coming this year. But that was the result of a personal experience that he had in November 2013 mm-hmm. with regard to his son and what happened there, and it drew everyone's attention to this issue. I would say that we, as the board and as political leaders for our own community have been looking at the system protocols and procedures. We know we don't have enough beds here.
Mm-hmm.
We know we are sending people that are in crisis all the way to the Tidewater area, for instance. So our crisis services portion of this discussion needs to be worked on, but the question is how and when and what are the legal areas that we can impact.
Yes.
Because there's HIPAA and other things involved that sometimes constrain our professionals in what they can do. With regard to emergency custody and temporary detention, for instance, we've looked at the telepsychiatry issue with regard to the fact that we can't deploy that service to the rural area very well
mm-hmm.
if our people out there don't have internet service.
Yes.
And then you bring up the cooperation among the courts and law enforcement. We do have a tremendous commitment, and this is on the part of not only Chief Longo, who's chief of police in the city of Charlottesville, but also Colonel Sellers, who's our chief of police in Elmo County, to
yes.
have police officers trained in terms of crisis intervention. And I know that our county attorneys are also involved with how do you make a decision, was this a criminal act or does this person need intervention with regard to mental health services?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're all working through this. I think it's a real focus. What it will require is some legislation allowing a little bit more leeway with dealing with mental health
mm-hmm.
crisis, and also, of course, resources, and there has to be political will to commit resources to that.
Yes. You know, it's... I'd like to elaborate on that relaxing legislation that relaxes how we deal with mental health. That historically, and I'm sure most people know, but it bears mentioning, not terribly long ago, as in the 20th century, people were just locked up because of our lack of understanding for mental health. They were institutionalized against their will, and certainly problems that existed in many cases were made worse because of the medical treatment that was given ill-advisedly. But, you know, when people don't know, they don't know. But now we know. We know a lot more, a lot better. And I guess I'm guessing, but I'm asking you, that what you're talking about is, I think the last time we saw one another, it was Krieg Deeds Mental Health Forum with Commonwealth Attorney Denise Lunsford. We're looking for the balance. There must be something between just throwing the mental health, people with mental health issues into an asylum or an institution, no matter how updated in 21st century it is technologically, and at the same time protecting the public. How does one find that balance? And I know you've said that, really. You've said we need legislation that with strong guidelines, because there was a time, you know, in my lifetime, I could have had my wife institutionalized just with my signature. And I'm not that old, but what do we do about that, Jane? You know what I mean?
I'm laughing because the awareness of this is growing, but you are so right that it wasn't but a few decades ago
yes.
that we were what now we consider to be in the dark ages with regard to our approach to these things.
Yes.
But we're not there yet, and it really is dependent on communication between and new policies thought through from a variety of partners, including
yes.
community services boards, folks like our Region 10, law enforcement. You mentioned Denise Lunsford and the Commonwealth Attorney, but our entire judicial system, we're talking about maybe setting up a mental health court
yes.
where we divert folks who are potentially criminally liable for their actions, but also perhaps committed these because they were mentally ill,
yes.
so they can have a special focus. And then we've got our private hospitals that we need to work through because they're constrained.
Mm.
And legally constrained. So
yes.
what's right? How do we protect liberty and the rights of individuals, and also the need for society to help individuals that are mentally ill? And
yeah.
that's a big question that
yes.
we're sorting through.
And the fact that we're sorting it through, at least in our area, well, I can't even say that anymore, can I? Our area certainly has been hit by this kind of violence, and although, like most, I say gun violence, all my law enforcement people said it's not just guns. And I try to remember that, too. Of course, it isn't just guns, and it isn't just the mentally ill. But there is violence in society, and we must maintain law enforcement and laws that clearly have a balance between what society needs to be protected and what society needs to be free. I'm going to tie that right into, so where do you go from here that might give you even more leverage to deal with some of the issues we've been talking about today? Fiscal responsibility, health care, particularly, I think, mental health care. I think Obamacare, whether one likes it or not, has done a great deal for physical health. But, you know, the Medicaid extension hits a brick wall occasionally too many places. And for that matter, Virginia hasn't even ratified the Equal Rights Amendment. So with all that in mind, tell us what your immediate political plans are and how you wish to make a difference in some of these things and in any other areas you care to mention.
Go back to a comment that you were making that I thought was good. I just want to add to it, and that is how impressed you are that communities like the city of Charlottesville and the county of Albemarle engage citizens at the grassroots level to help make decisions when political bodies actually get together and make those decisions.
Yes.
That's real democracy. That's real democracy in action. And sometimes people have said to me since I've announced that I'm going to run for Congress in 2016, oh, you're going for higher office. And my immediate and visceral reaction to that is, no, the highest office is closest to the people.
You know that's true.
And,
yes.
And I really feel passionately about that, but that this place, being on this board, is where you're closest to citizens and can make the biggest impact. The reason why I decided not to seek another term and to run for a different office is the partnership in order for local government to do the very best for our citizens need to be strong, partnership between the state and also the federal legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can use our seat in the 5th District to do even more for local government and in cooperation with state government. And there are several areas that I feel very competent in, which is what I'm running on. So for me, my plan is to go to Washington, work on immediately a couple of areas, and then, of course, carry through on the responsibilities that generally come the way of a congressperson. But the three areas, Marcello, that I'm interested in, feel passionate about, is workforce training, and not just K through 12 or our technical education for those entering the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
We have a district that's working pretty hard on that, and we are focused. We need to retool the adult workforce on an ongoing basis.
Yes.
The economy is changing too often, and we can't attract good employers. We also can't help our local businesses throughout the district expand without a really well-tooled workforce. So people that are 60 that want to keep working or have to keep working need training. And there's a lot of room for improvement there. That'll take resources and uniting our various programs at each level, that being local, state, and federal. And then, of course, the infrastructure of broadband, the internet and cell service deficit that we have. You know that we, as a country, are lagging behind some of the rest of the world in terms of our deployment. And then our rural areas are lagging behind our more urban and suburban areas. So we are institutionalizing poverty and actually poor economies outside of the areas that have internet. We need to do something about that, and it needs to be done now. So, and then finally, your congressman can work very closely with regard to state and regional and local economic development people as they seek to attract new employers or help existing business. And I have a good economic development background, so I want to be a good partner in those ways. So that's what's driving my decision to be somewhere else where I can give back to the place I love.
You know, I'm so glad you made that point, that the highest and best level of government is that which is closest to the people. And yes, I have seen that here, and I think one can go to Congress and be that kind of congressperson, that kind of member of the Congress, But we haven't always seen that. And most recently, I think the 5th District of the Commonwealth of Virginia has not had the benefit of that. And I know because as a member of the media, I've often gone to that office for various reasons. And then, not that there's been no response. There has been some response, but not from the congressman himself because he's rarely in that office. So tell us, Jane Dittmar, you've made it clear why, in my opinion, we should elect you to Congress to represent the 5th District of Virginia. But tell us who are not from Virginia, how big is, not just geographically, but the needs of the 5th District? How big is it geographically in Virginia, and what sort of different kinds of lives and standards and opinions? Because I think the 5th District is pretty huge and not centered politically, but I could be wrong. What are your thoughts?
It's a diverse district. We stretch all the way from Fauquier County, which is Warrenton area, and considered now really part of Northern Virginia, all the way south through the Charlottesville region, all the way to the North Carolina border.
Wow.
And so you have really three sub-regions. You've got South Side, which was devastated with the shedding of manufacturing jobs, textile particularly, and furniture making, and then the shrinkage of the tobacco industry. And you've got a rural area between South Side and the Charlottesville area. Our area is different in terms of having the University of Virginia and a lot of public dollars that come in here. And then in the North Side, and that's my term, which goes Green, Madison, Rappahannock and Fauquier there, they have a different sub-region and needs as well. This district is larger than the state of New Jersey. It's 10,000 square miles.
Wow.
It's 21 counties, two cities, and 31 towns. It's big. And so in representing it, you have to think about the individual sub-regions and also the localities and what they're trying to do for their people.
And I think, frankly, that's where being a chair on the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors and all of the committees, advisory committees that you've been part of creating of citizens, be they business owners, teachers, rank and file, students. I think that has so prepared you to take a different approach and a different POV at the federal level. And I imagine that you will come back here often be closer to the people, because that's what you've always been. But what do you think, how do you reach such a large geographic area, but mostly an area that is so politically diverse or opinionated, if that's too strong a word, I apologize. But it's a huge place with different political points of view. How do you pull them together?
Well, I think the fortunate thing is we have 14 months to do that. I still have quite a bit of work to do in my job representing the citizens of Scottsville and looking out for the county's interest. That will come to a conclusion at the end of December. And then the next 11 months, January to Election Day, will be about getting out and meeting with people in each of those places and listening, of course, but also communicating, you know, what my viewpoints are, how I process my decision making, to build the kind of trust that people who may not have known me, who live in other parts of the district, will need to know, well, is she a good thinker? How does she make her judgments? We may not always disagree, but generally we're on the same page. If I can meet enough people, I think that's election.
Well, I think you are an excellent choice, and I'm glad you've chosen to run to be the Congress representative for us for the 5th District of Virginia in the House of Representatives. I, of course, wish you all the best in that, because I've seen your work up close and personal on the county level in Virginia as a reporter and as someone who's gotten to know you. I look forward to your successful campaign. And, of course, you're coming back and talking to us as often as you like. Are there any, especially I love and I want us to take this away, everyone, the highest level of service for a civil servant in government is that level that's closest to the people. That's who Jane Dittmar is. I love that. Jane, is there any final parting words you want to tell us?
I just want to thank you, Marcella, for having me on this show. I've loved talking about county business and how it relates to people that we all work with and play with.
Yes.
Go to church with and live with, and I will do the same if I am able to have a successful campaign to Washington. I will be back here talking about it as frequently as you want me to.
Now, I know you didn't bring it up, but I'm going to bring it up. Is there a website for your campaign, a way that people can not only get more information about you, but perhaps volunteer or donate the services or money? Can you give that to us?
Yes, thank you. It is janeforcongress.com, and it's spelled out F-O-R, Jane for Congress. Thanks, Marcella.
My pleasure. Thank you, and all the best, and talk to you soon again, I hope. Bye now.
Thank you, Marcella. Have a good rest of the day.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
Stay with us, as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Shallow pop culture is everywhere today. Reality TV stars show up on red carpets with real actors and actresses. Viral videos play on the news. Cruelty is played for laughs. And outright selfishness is becoming the law of the land. This mindset is skewered by Bobcat Goldthwait's wonderfully subversive satire, God Bless America. Frank Murdoch is in the thick of a midlife crisis. His daughter refuses to see him, he has lost his job, and he's been diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. But moments before he ends his own misery, he spots a bratty teenage reality star cussing out her parents for buying her the wrong car for her birthday. Turning his inner rage outward, Frank kills the girl for her rudeness. Feeling vindicated, Frank and his new accomplice, Roxy, a classmate of the deceased, then mount a killing spree in the name of ending cruelty and stupidity. Bold and uncompromising, God Bless America twists the knife in pop culture's back. This offbeat black comedy is a social satire which often travels uncomfortably close to the line of acceptability. But then we should expect this from Bobcat Goldthwait, and let's face it, it is kind of fun to watch the selfish and shallow get their comeuppance. God Bless America. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. American history. Winners, losers, labels, decisions, and traditions. Why should we care who wins presidential debates, as if our arbitrary categories, discriminatory labels, and arrogant classifications, like blue for boys and pink for girls, matter? Or is it black lives matter only if others don't? To labels like red and blue states, I say, off with their heads! Our best humanity is rooted in the passions of intellectual dreamers, like John and Abigail Adams, Jefferson, Dolly Madison, and James Monroe. From such people come prophets who open our minds to protecting fresh air, so we can provide foundations for those who ask why not, like Frederick Douglass, Eleanor Roosevelt, Rosa Parks, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Bobby Kennedy, Maya Angelou, Obama, and Bernie. Nonetheless, like the unwavering labor of nurses and administrative assistants, we need pragmatic centrists as caregivers for our shared village of cultural diversity, like Benjamin Franklin, Thurgood Marshall, Lincoln, FDR, Alice Paul, JFK, and Bill and Hillary Clinton, too. Without the dreamer's passion, the constant balancing act of political pragmatists and, as needed, the additional seasoning of all-inclusive nuance, we and our dreams stagnate. Soiled by Wall Street, internally damaged by tobacco lies, pharmaceutical greed, and the bias of food deserts, we fall victim to the ignorance of jealousy. And without a lifeline to global education, our reason is breached, and desperation makes us vulnerable to the ramblings of anti-humane political nonsense, climate change denial, and drone collateral damage. It's not about who wins or loses a debate. It's not even about choosing sides or sidearms. It's about making rational choices that recapture and embrace our national helm and a one-for-all and all-for-one keel. It's about helping each other get the wind back beneath our wings. If, just to make the point that our comfort zone feels threatened, we opt for a State of the Union that is multiple Kent states, then we are accomplices after the fact challenged media and politicians. In the life of a nation blessed with much to give, do, and be, there are repeated opportunities for life-determining decisions which redefine, center, and realign. Life has demanded no less from African queens, Egyptian pharaohs, citizens of Rome, or Romanov serfs. So, auto manufacturers, bankers, candidates, CIA, civil servants, elected officials, families, oil companies, governors, Guantanamo torturers, judges, law enforcement, non-voters, NSA spies, racists, the Secret Service, terrorists, ours and theirs, and bunkered drone operators. It's your turn to heed what's MIA from our history books. Shall we rewrite our Constitution? Shut off all alarms and play dead? Elect the enlightened and crew the ship of state ourselves? Or just fill our sails with more hot air? Either way, we're blowing in the wind unless we fact-check. 1. Communism and socialism are not twins. 2. Exceptionalism would be not resembling Putin's foreign policy. 3. America has left behind troops after most of our military engagements. 4. Democrat, Republican, Independent, or Socialist, most of our boots on the ground and the kids providing a good kill in our name are the children of middle class and poor families ordered to do the bidding of, you guessed it, one percenters. President Obama's decision to return troops to Iraq and leave troops in Afghanistan is upholding American traditions inherited from past administrations and current corporatism. However, voters can revolutionize decisions by evolving to winning without labeling. Winners of the first Democratic presidential debate are the mirror image of the losers in the Republican debates. America, thinking for ourselves, young people, women, especially seniors, immigrants, immigration reform, children, and all Americans who daily live the civility of the Golden Rule, believing all life on earth matters more than any guns heard round the world. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.